Canceling plans because your knees hurt? Nope, not anymore. Get to Joint Relief Institute. Safe, fast, immediate pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. We're about to talk about heartworm disease. Whoa! It's an important topic, though. It truly, truly is. And whether you have a dog or a cat or potentially a pet ferret, I guess a pet sea lion, this will matter to you, or at least it should. Veterinary cardiologist Dr. Marisa Ames is an associate professor at the University of California Davis School of Veterinary Medicine and also president of the American Heartworm Society. And I think, Dr. Ames, we start at the very beginning. What is heartworm disease?
Great place to start. Heartworm disease is a parasite, so it's like a little worm in the class nematode. And these parasites have evolved with dogs for millennia, and they are transmitted through a mosquito vector. So if you have a dog with an infection, that mature infection is creating little heartworm babies, little larvae. The mosquito then has to, you know, bite that dog and pick up those larvae in a blood meal, and those larvae have to mature in the mosquito. It transfers that infection to the next dog or cat, as you said, and then that infection, you know, migrates through the body, and these little worms end up growing in the lung vessels. They're called the pulmonary arteries. So heartworm's a little bit of a misnomer. This disease lives in the pulmonary arteries predominantly, and that's where they live and grow. In really bad infections, they'll fall back into the heart, but they're predominantly in the pulmonary artery. They then start the life cycle all over again and mature and create babies, and that's where the mosquito picks up a new infection, and so on, and it just keeps spreading.
Now, if people are thinking, well, I live downtown Chicago, and we have listeners literally all over the United States. Well, heartworm is more prevalent where there are more mosquitoes, particularly mosquitoes that carry heartworm, which are many. It exists, to my understanding, everywhere. Is that true?
Yes, it has been diagnosed in all 50 states, and that's including Alaska. And you're right, there are many mosquito species that can transmit heartworm disease, and some of them are even spreading. As the climate shifts and changes, there are certain mosquitoes that love urban areas, and they're really good at hiding out even in cold climates. And so it's really hard to predict kind of when the infection season starts or ends, even in northern climates. The infection season is basically year-round in the southern United States, but a bit seasonal in the northern U.S., but it's too hard to predict. So the Heartworm Society just recommends preventing year-round.
Which I'll talk more about in a few minutes, but I want to talk about the magic P word, and that's prevention. Do you agree that heartworm is theoretically about, he says, pretty nearly close to, he says, 100% preventable, but then people have to purchase the preventative and then actually use it? Is that true?
That you are correct, and thank you for bringing up prevention. You know, when used as, you know, according to directions, there are multiple FDA-approved preventives that are close to 100% effective at preventing these disease. But you know, it can be confusing, and I think learning exactly what the prevention products you're using in your animal covers is important. We now have products that cover the parasites that are on the outside of the body, like ticks and things that bite your dog, like fleas, as well as the parasites that are inside, such as the parasites that live in the gut, as well as heartworms. And so there are multiple preventives. Some of them are combination products, and just making sure that your prevention product that you're using in your animal also covers heartworm. So it's worth asking your veterinarian.
And it's actually a good deal, quote unquote, because you're getting a product, potentially, depending on what you choose, that actually not only prevents heartworm, but may also prevent that and that and that. And you mentioned tick disease, which some argue is at an all-time high and can be devastating to pets. But then it's confusing for people. So how do people know which product? Because there are so many products out there that are delivered in a variety of different ways. Some, you apply to the back of the dog's neck. Other are chewables. And there's even an injectable product. So what do people choose?
You choose what you think is going to be easiest for you to give. And so if that's, you know, there's a specific heartworm prevention product that is administered every 6 months as an injection or every 12 months. If you're like me and sometimes you forget things unless you sent 16 different reminders, then you should probably pick an option that will help you be as compliant as possible. You know, if you prefer a spot-on product versus an oral, there's options for that too. But again, it is confusing. I think with our wonderful World Wide Web, there is information out there. Just make sure you're getting it from ideally the manufacturer itself. So the drug companies that make these products make nice informational sites. The American Heartworm Society, Companion Animal Parasite Council, or CAPSI. There's a lot of really well-vetted websites out there. So look for the names you know, like the American Heartworm Society or CAPSI. And then, of course, talk to your vet and try to find the information that explains what's in these products. The American Heartworm Society does have a chart on our website under the banner More Information, and it'll actually break down exactly what each branded preventive covers, and I think is very useful.
And that website would be what? Heartwormsociety.org? I think?
Yeah, I should have it memorized.
No, that's okay. I think I've got it. Heartwormsociety.org, I think, is the website. So let me ask you a question related to that. The problem might vary depending on where you live and what your lifestyle is, and here's what I mean. So if we're talking about heartworm, but also a product that may cover tick disease in Illinois and in Chicago, where there is tick disease, by the way, everywhere, even in the heart of Chicago, it will be different than if you reside in Arizona, where we have listeners, or if you travel to Arizona for the winter, for which I hope you take me with you. So I am a huge proponent, because your veterinarian knows which product will work best geographically. And if that veterinarian has a relationship with you, will also know what might work best for you. And every pet is different. What might work best for that pet?
I think that is excellent information. And many veterinarians will carry the products that are relevant to their area. So if ticks are an issue, you know, they'll be sure to have products that cover that cover ticks as well. And so I agree. Talk with your veterinarian. They know your climate, et cetera. And I think you mentioned lifestyle. And I think that's one thing where heartworms, lifestyle isn't always a reason, in that we know that mosquitoes get inside. So an indoor lifestyle, or say an apartment, you know, complex that the dog goes out on a balcony to use the bathroom, et cetera. So that is not an excuse not to prevent for heartworm disease, and that we know mosquitoes get inside and are everywhere.
They do, and I'll talk more about that. I also want to talk about heartworm in cats and what the internet says, and we'll do all of that when we come back with Dr. Marisa Ames on WGN. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Dr. Marisa Ames is president of the American Heartworm Society and also an associate professor at the University of California, Davis, a veterinary cardiologist. And we're talking about heartworm disease, but I want to make a point, Dr. Ames, of talking about, because people may be, why is he spending all this time on the radio talking about heartworm? Because this disease can be deadly to dogs. And I think what we know now is even when treated, that dog, whether you know it or not, will never be quite the same. Can you talk about all that?
Yes. As I mentioned earlier, this worm lives in the pulmonary arteries, And just its existence in the pulmonary arteries can damage that delicate tissue. And our pulmonary arteries do a lot. They're moving blood. They're, you know, moving oxygen to where it needs to be in the lung. And so this is really important tissue for just, you know, a good, not only exercise ability, but just feeling good. And so that damage can happen early. And that's why the annual screening is recommended, so we can catch these infections as early as possible, since many dogs will not show outward signs. So yes, the damage is important and can be very bad, but it's remarkable that most dogs with heartworm infection don't show signs. And so we recommend that annual treatment to catch that infection as early as possible and try to treat it. And you're right that after treatment, that some many animals have permanent damage. Luckily, there's a lot of surface area in the pulmonary blood vessels or the lung blood vessels, and so there can be some redundancy. And you know, many dogs aren't debilitated, especially with modern treatment protocols. And so that's good, but there is permanent damage, and really earlier is better than later. Some dogs get very severe heartworm disease. Luckily, this is not the majority, but they can have progression to heart failure, even where the pump or the heart is just not able to circulate blood appropriately and fluid backs up. And that can be very devastating and be, you know, a terminal problem for a dog that, you know, had a disease that could have been preventive.
So let's gross people out. So imagine, sure. and first thing in the morning too. So imagine, and you'll describe to me what an adult heartworm looks like. And it's not unusual for a dog to carry a load of 10, 20, 30, potentially three times that number of heartworm living inside it. Describe what that looks like when you look at it.
Yeah, these are, you know, imagine it's kind of like a very thin spaghetti type worm. Sorry for the pasta reference. And they, the females are the bigger worms, and they can be, you know, close to 12 inches long. They're quite long. And you're right, you know, say a beagle-sized dog, they can have, you know, a dozen or two dozen worms or even more in some cases, kind of all bustling around in those pulmonary arteries. And so it's very impactful in a space-occupying factor as well as just the damage to all those delicate lung blood vessel tissues.
And people will say, well, okay, it's not going to happen. And maybe you have a better reason that people explain this. When our friend Dr. Shelley Rubin was president, he said, and this tagline was used, you know, you, for one Starbucks, you can, I don't know his exact line, but something like for a Starbucks, you can prevent heartworm in your dog. Just skip the Starbucks for people complaining about cost. And cost is, I don't want to discount it, a real issue today. I get that. And also people think, it's not going to happen to me. I've had dogs all my life. I've never had this problem. So can you talk about that a little bit, what people explain to themselves as to why they decline giving a heartworm preventative?
I think that's a very realistic concern. And, you know, we're all, I think, trying to pinch our pennies and be as economical as possible. And there are formulations where, you know, some of the less expensive formulations that only treat heartworm disease. And again, talking with your vet, you know, what should I prioritize, and finding, you know, if it's a combination product, the most efficient combination product. Generally, it, on average, the more that's in there, the more expensive things tend to be. But finding one that, you know, if really heartworm is the biggest risk in your area, there's just single heartworm prevention, which can be relatively economical, not necessarily convenient, but you could consider purchasing 1 month at a time, which literally would be like purchasing your, you know, maybe a few Starbucks every month. And so, you know, there's ways to troubleshoot that. And I think a lot of the things we tell ourselves is, you know, some of the myths we alluded to earlier, you know, my dog doesn't go outdoor very often, and I don't see mosquitoes. And obviously the climate question of, well, it gets pretty cold here in the winter, but again, mosquitoes are smart. Some of the urban, especially urban loving mosquitoes, are good at finding warm areas to continue to live even in cold climates. And so, you know, we tell ourselves this to try to make us, you know, think the risk is lower. But this parasite has evolved again for millennia. It's good at surviving, and it will unfortunately continue to survive. So,
I wonder if, so some cities, not far from you at Los Angeles, and right here in Chicago, I think Chicago tops L.A., for more urban coyotes than any other city in the country. So I wonder, because I believe, and I need your help here, coyotes can get heartworm too, and that increase in the number of coyotes actually increases the amount of heartworm that's out there in the environment. Is that true?
That is true. The wild dogs, so coyotes and wolves, are reservoirs of this infection. And unfortunately, they're out of our reach. You know, they're not going to be on treatment, which is why it's really important to treat the dogs we can. Same with stray dogs in the area. They're also out of reach and not on treatment. But yes, coyotes are one reason. And so you'll see kind of persistent areas in California, both southern, northern, and we've noticed some areas even in Montana. And the best explanation is just the wild canid population that's helping maintain that infection.
I think there are, let me rephrase that. I know there are some misconceptions online regarding heartworm and heartworm products. I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about heartworm disease in cats. I have not forgotten about that. And another question I'll be asking you is, when I go in for my annual physical for our dog and the veterinarian says, well, I need a heartworm test, and you say back, well, why? I give the preventive. I'm really good at that. You can tell I'm good at that because I need new product now. I'm all out. But the veterinarian says, but you still need to do that test. We'll talk about why you still need to do that test when we come back on WGN. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Dr. Marisa Ames is the president of the American Heartworm Society. She's a veterinary cardiologist, associate professor at the University of California, Davis. What has driven your interest, I'm just curious, in heartworm disease?
It started when I was training as in a cardiology residency. So yes, there are veterinary cardiologists, and after internship, we do additional training in a residency, and my residency was at North Carolina State University, an area of high heartworm incidence, and had some, you know, beloved patients that came in with heartworms in their heart. So kind of the, one of the bad results of a severe heartworm infection is the worms can actually fall backwards, so to speak, from the lung vessels and come back into the heart. And that's how the name kind of, it got the name heartworm. And had to remove these heartworms via a minimally invasive procedure, an interventional procedure where we pull them out through the jugular vein, and got really close with the owners and the dogs, of course. And in some cases, you know, owners were, you know, surprised, you know, that maybe they missed a dose or two, you know, a year earlier, and just kind of devastated by this sequela. And I think it was getting close with those owners and seeing just how devastating this disease can be, and then learning also, you know, how easy it is to prevent it, yet there's still barriers to getting people to adhere to prevention and believe in the importance of prevention. And just epidemiologically, it's a very important disease affecting dogs worldwide, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was the motivation to study it more.
All right, so let's talk about one of those barriers, and that is something that should help us, and that's the internet. But there are websites, and there's chatter and online in places like TikTok and Instagram saying, well, if you use that heartworm preventative, and if you have that breed, whatever that is, well, your dog will die. Or try this, chicken soup. That works, or something like that. Maybe not literally chicken soup, but some concoction that their Aunt Annie devised. So it is, I think, and I'm curious about what you think, a concern that too many people are abiding by not the websites you refer to, like the American Heartworm Society, heartwormsociety.org, but in fact, others, other websites, other so-called experts who aren't expert at all.
I think it's a huge issue in so many areas of health right now. And I just, for your listeners, just trying to vet what the source is. And, you know, I think, thank you for having me here today, because the message is rather simple, in, or relatively straightforward, in that there are there are, you know, vetted preventives and treatment strategies for heartworm disease, and no pun intended, but these are, you know, there's really only one class of drug that prevents heartworm disease, and it's the macrocyclic lactone, and that includes things like ivermectin and selamectin, moxidectin, and nobamycin. Really, that's the class of drug that we have that prevents this. So that is one of our messages from the Heartworm Society. If it's not that type of drug, a macrocyclic lactone, it's unfortunately not going to effectively prevent heartworm disease. So there's a lot of, you know, anecdotal remedies out there. And unfortunately, this is a really savvy parasite that has evolved for millennia. And it is hard to prevent. And it requires these drugs. And there is research to try to understand what other molecules will help prevent heartworm disease to give us more options and maybe less expensive options in the future. But for now, really, there's one good class of drug to prevent, and that's the macrocyclic lactone class. And we're also, you know, there's treatment strategies that are also well studied and that include either arsenical injection of a drug called molarsamine and or the use of a preventive in a strategic approach to a non-arsenical strategy.
Okay, that's all very technical. But one thing you said, though, that it is a very clever, like any sort of parasite can be over time, is the resistance happening out there?
That's a great question. So most infections that seem to be a breakthrough where, you know, I was giving the prevention reliably, you know, every month, I've never missed a dose. You know, when you really dig down into the history, you know, we're all humans, and I include myself, things happen. And, you know, depending on where you live, if you live in the southeastern U.S., one missed dose is all it takes in a really high-pressure infection area, and that can be enough. And so often these lapses loss of efficacy there are two reasons. One is that there was a break in administration break, or some sort of compliance problem. Some dogs spit the product out behind the couch and the owner never knew. So things like that happen. And so that's probably more common than true resistance, but there are resistant isolates of heartworm. And just to go, I don't want to get too technical, but to go back into that life cycle, the resistance is happening in the larval stages, the stage that we're trying to prevent. So mosquito bites a dog and these third and fourth stage larvae are moving through the tissues. That's what the preventives actually kill. And that's where we're finding resistance to those macrocyclic lactone preventives. This resistance seems to be happening mostly in the southeastern U.S., especially along the Mississippi River. So higher chance of resistance in that area. And that said, you know, groups that study resistance genetically are finding fingerprints of resistance in more widespread areas outside of the Mississippi River area, so further north. And so resistance is a big concern. And, you know, luckily not the most, it's not so common that, you know, we're not saying the sky is falling, but we need to be very vigilant. And that's one reason for the screening, the annual screening. And I think we're going to talk about that in a minute. So maybe I can bring that up again when we talk about annual screening of dogs.
Yes. And in fact, when we come back from the break, we will talk about annual screening of dogs. And oh my gosh, we haven't done it yet. And that is talk about heartworm disease in cats. And yes, it can occur in cats and other animals too. Some of them I will bring up as well when we come back on WGN with Dr. Marisa Ames. From the American Heartworm Society, their president, Dr. Marisa Ames, is here, veterinary cardiologist, associate professor, University of California, Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, which is a great place. I love that area in California. I love your campus. I love talking about heartworm disease. I really do. But then you go into the veterinarian, and the vet says to you, we need to do the heartworm test. And you say, why? the veterinarian answers and you say, that doesn't apply to me. I'm very compliant. You can tell because I purchased 1 year of medication and I'm all out. So can you discuss why that heartworm test is important?
Great question. And the big reason, number one, is the trying to catch an infection as early as possible. As we talked about, that damage to the delicate lining of the lung blood vessels happens early in infection. And so catching it as early as possible is really important to try to treat it and mitigate worsening of lung pathology and lung damage. The second reason is what we were just mentioning, in that we would like to surveil the efficacy of our prevention drugs. And, you know, although, you know, so one reason is to screen for resistance. So if you get an infection that in an animal that has been well protected, there is the potential for resistance. And, you know, your listeners are welcome to reach out to the American Heartworm Society at our website, AmericanHeartwormSociety.org, just HeartwormSociety.org, and we can help navigate potential resistance issues with your veterinarian. But again, that's the less common reason for these breakthrough or loss of efficacy. Sometimes it's that we were just human and something happened and we forgot a dose or doses, and we catch those infections that, you know, we didn't remember that we had a lapse in prevention. And so trying to catch those infections and surveil our compliance and surveil the presence of resistance, which fortunately is currently, they do exist, resistant isolates exist, but it's not the most common reason for loss of efficacy. And then finally, treating an animal with prevention, a preventive medication that has heartworm infection is generally safe. So most dogs with an active heartworm infection will tolerate the preventive, and that's no, the inability of an owner to do a screening test shouldn't lead to withholding prevention products. So that's always a concern, that a prevention gets, you know, not dispensed because of inability to do the screening test. But the American Heart Society recommends that the owners still get their prevention even if they can't do the screening test. It is generally safe to administer the prevention on top of an infection that's happening. In rare instances, you know, the effect of the prevention, it can kill some of those larvae and the larvae circulating in the bloodstream and cause an anaphylaxis type reaction, but that is uncommon. So that's the third reason, which is just to see, does this dog have an infection? It's ideal not to bathe that infection with chronic macrocyclic lactone drugs, and that's how resistance develops, where you just kind of bathe them with the prevention product.
Okay, so we have only about 5 minutes left, and we talked about this just a little very, very early on, and that is the expense of treatment in dogs. For cats, there is no expense to treatment because there is no treatment. And heartworm disease in many ways is somewhat of a different disease in cats. So in the few minutes we have remaining, I'd like you to explain what that's about.
Yeah, cats absolutely get infected the same way dogs do. And so generally the risk for cats mirrors that of the dog. And those little heartworm larvae will get into their tissues. Cats have a higher risk of the larvae taking a wrong turn and going to another place, which can lead to other problems, such as disease in the eye or brain. And so cats have a higher incidence of that.
And I believe sudden death as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yep, and sudden death. So the worms that do make it to the lung, the cat immune system, this is not a parasite that evolved with their species, and their immune system is really good at beating up those migrating baby heartworms. And in many cases, cats will clear the infection and kill everything in that larval stage, but that still leads to lung damage. And so, ironically, even though they killed the infection, they still have bad lung disease and can have coughing and asthma-like signs. And in some cats, they have a worm that does grow up, or worms. The infection in cats is usually a lower number of worms. The worms aren't used to thriving in that species. And so they'll have a smaller worm burden, but that's still important. You know, we talked about females, you know, being, you know, close to a foot long, and that's a lot of space in a small blood vessels of a cat lung. And so even a few worms can be very damaging. And as you mentioned, sudden death can happen in cats with heartworm infection as well. And so much easier to prevent than to treat, because as you mentioned, we don't have an arsenic product like we do in dogs that will kill the heartworm in the cat. And in many cases, we use an anecdotal protocol, and veterinarians have different choices, with one option being to do nothing and another to try to chip away at that worm with a macrocyclic lactone preventive product that does slowly kill the worms.
So I would imagine you'd agree that if you live on the 80th floor of a high rise and your windows are never open and your cat never does go outside, that, okay, maybe if you live in a climate like Chicago, it's not so necessary to protect cats. However, for many, many people, and increasingly people are taking their cats out on a harness and leash and they're walking in the grass where mosquitoes are hanging out, even in a climate like Chicago, for those cats and just in general, mosquitoes go indoors, like you said. We've all seen them.
Yeah.
That protection for cats is probably a good idea.
Agree. Yep. Mosquitoes go inside, and I agree that protection on the inside indoors is absolutely worthwhile. And even if you have screens on your windows, you know, we know that there's not perfect. Sometimes you have a hole that nobody knew about. So bugs get in, whether we like it or not.
Yep, I understand that. Now, if you have a pet sea lion, also protect that sea lion. I think sea lions get heartworm, but so do pet ferrets. Is there any protection for pet ferrets?
Yes, there is one preventive product labeled for ferret, and it's the smallest size of Advantage Multi. It's a spot-on product with moxidectin and imidacloprid. So you can talk to your veterinarian. It's usually the smallest size available, and it is approved for ferrets.
All right.
And prevention of heartworm infection.
And if you want real information from the right source about heartworm disease, no one would argue American Heartworm Society, heartwormsociety.org. Is that what I just said? Is that right?
Yep,
okay.
That is correct.
I thought so. Okay, heartwormsociety.org. Dr. Marisa Ames, the president of the American Heartworm Society, thank you so much. We really did. We talked about everything there is to talk about regarding heartworm. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Should there be a Betty Ford Center for dogs? Many dogs love tennis balls, squeaky toys, an endless game of fetch. That's not news, is it? No, it's not. But according to new research published in Scientific Reports, some dogs may take that enthusiasm to an extreme, displaying behavior that resembles an addiction. A subset of highly play-motivated dogs may exhibit addictive-like behavior toward toys, prompting researchers to compare their compulsive play habits to behavioral addictions in people. The study examined 105 dogs identified by owners as especially toy-driven and found that 33 of them, about a third, showed behavioral patterns researchers say align with key markers of addiction. Those dogs demonstrated persistent fixation on toys, difficulty disengaging when the toys are removed, and continued attempts to access those toys when even unavailable. Now, some of these dogs ignored everything else. Food, their favorite people, other toys that were not totally their favorites. And researchers also noted that some dogs appeared unable to calm down after the play sessions ended. The authors cautioned that loving toys is perfectly normal canine behavior and often reflects healthy play drive, especially in breeds selectively developed for working roles. But in some dogs, that motivation may become, according to the study, quote, crazy, excessive enough to interfere with normal functioning. Researchers point out that toy play activities in many of the same rewards the pathways in the brain associated with pleasurable human activities. So here's what in dogs, especially those bred for retrieving, herding, detection work, or other high drive jobs, toy play is particularly reinforcing. The chemicals in the brain are in overdrive. The study suggests that in rare cases, those rewarding effects become so powerful that play shifts from enjoyable to something called compulsive. Behaviorists have informally referred to certain intensely toy-driven dogs as ball junkies. But this is the first scientific study to systematically investigate whether such dogs may meet criteria similar to behavioral addiction. And that includes behavioral addiction in humans. Same criteria. What the study doesn't write about or talk about, okay, what to do about it? So I guess that's the next step for those ball junkies. Next week, we will find out if I am right about this. So, you know, I've been talking for a while now, in fact, for many years, but recently again stressing the use of shock collars is absolutely, under any circumstance, not necessary, not advisable. And people have come back to me and said, okay, well, if it's between life and death, and the dog, you need, because the dog is being so aggressive and you need to do something, use a shock collar. And I say, no, I've got a better idea. Use a veterinary behaviorist. Well, next week I will have not one, but two veterinary behaviorists on the radio. They've recently authored Blackwell's 5-Minute Veterinary Consult Clinical Companion, at least the new and updated version. We'll hear from Dr. Amy Pike and Dr. Debbie Horowitz, and I will ask them both that question regarding shock collars. That's next week when we'll talk to you bright and early on WGN.